right. Well, here we are. To dream again. To dare again. To feel enjoyment and happiness again. Or for the first time. To realize this is living. Be inspired. To see your life as an exciting journey of discovery. With your host of the Inspire Possibility Show, Mark Sussman.
Hi, everybody. This is Mark Sussman. Thanks for tuning in to the Inspire Possibility Show. And every week I invite people that who I think are going to inspire us to perhaps open our minds more and think differently and think about some of the things that kind of occur in our lives that make us uncomfortable and give us a different perspective. And when I got this email from one of the publicists that I work with, I said, yes, I do want to book Charles Garfield. And Charles Garfield book is called Life's Last Gift, and you might wonder what that is. And Charles Garfield is a psychologist, he's an author, he's the founder of the Shanti Project, which is a widely acclaimed AIDS and cancer service organization. He's a clinical professor of psychology in the Department of Psychiatry at UC Med, and for nearly four decades, he's been doing this kind of work. So he's also now in the Graduate Theology Union in Berkeley in the Star King School for the Ministry. And Charles basically trains people to work with people that are making this transition. And he offers his practical advice about finding connection, honesty, and peace while being of the greatest service to those at the end of life. By focusing on the reciprocal and healing relationship between the living and the dying, which continues until the last breath, he offers a path toward clarity and wholeness and even growth. So welcome, Charles Garfield, to the Inspire Possibility Show. It's my honor to have you.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me. I look forward to it.
Well, you know, one thing when I was just reading your bio here, and it says, by focusing on the reciprocal and healing relationship between the living and the dying. What do you mean by, how is that like how is that reciprocal and healing? Can you kind of tell us a little bit about that?
I sure can. It's reciprocal and healing because it's not only the living, healthy person giving to the dying person, but you also get a lot. I've gotten more from doing this work for 43 years now than from anything else I've ever done. One learns the most important lessons in life about gratitude, about forgiveness, about making memories, especially about love, more in doing this work than anything else I can imagine. So it's reciprocal in that it goes both ways.
Wow. And what about the title? What I kind of intrigued me was the title, Life's Last Gift. I mean, it's from the title itself, it gets you to wonder what that is. And how did you come up with that title?
Well, you know, I came up with the subtitle first. The subtitle of the book is Giving and Receiving Peace When a Loved One is Dying. And Life's Last Gift is the opportunity, the final opportunity to allow for peace in both the survivor and also the dying person. It's an evocative title. A lot of people are commenting on it, and I suppose that part of the reason that the book has been responded to so amazingly on a national basis is because of the title. People are curious the way you were about what it actually means.
Yeah, no, I definitely was. So tell us more about that.
Well, you know what? The book is essentially a guidebook. We have more guidebooks in this country on how to play golf and how to fix your car than we do on how to care for the people you love most in the whole world when they're in their most difficult situation. And so I decided I'd write that guidebook. 650,000 people die every year in the United States, and many of them at home, and 90% of Americans think that it's the family's responsibility to care for those folks. And yet we have no guidance. Most of us have no guidance on how to do it. So I took a look at an enormous amount of material on relationships, on the best relationships. And I said, well, if it works in a relationship during life, those ideas are probably useful at the end of life also. And that's what the book is essentially structured around. It's structured around 9 commitments one can make to people we love who are in the final stages of their lives that will bring them greater peace.
So do you want to talk about these 9 commitments?
Sure, absolutely. The first one, and probably the most important, if you learn only one thing, it would be listening from the heart. Actually listening from the heart to the person you love who's in the end stages of their lives. Most of the time when we're with people, we pretend to listen to them. We sort of listen. We half listen. But we're mostly thinking about other things. And what we're saying here is listening from the heart means you give full attention to the other person. And they know it. They know. We know when somebody is listening to us and when they're not really. 70 to 90% of the information we send to one another in a conversation is sent nonverbally, not the words, but the way we look, the way our eyes are darting around or not, whether we're really paying attention, what our body posture is like. And so listening from the heart means all of our attention goes to the person who's in the difficult situation. And then we go on to speaking from the heart. Another very important thing. You don't have to know the right thing to say. Nobody knows the right thing to say all the time. But you speak from the heart. You speak with kindness, and you give it your absolute best shot in telling the truth. We also talk about acting from the heart, doing the small things. Sometimes small things that mean an enormous amount to the person in the bed. I remember when my mother was dying, I cared for my mother and my father and my best friend when each of them were dying. And my mother wanted a particular kind of ice cream, and she wanted it. That was the greatest gift I could bring her, and it was a small thing, but every single time I visited her, I came with the ice cream, and I could see her light up. And when I asked her why it was so important, she said, well, it's my last enjoyment. Besides seeing you here, it's my last enjoyment. And I realized just how important it was to her.
Right. When my mother died, I played my bamboo flute in the hospital.
I love it.
Just to kind of generate peace.
Absolutely. That's a very touching story.
Yeah. And empathy.
Yeah, empathy, it's important to know what it means. Empathy means an imaginative entrance into the world of another person's situation. It's we put ourselves in their shoes and we ask ourselves, what would we want if we were them, if we were in the final stages of our lives, what would we actually want? By doing so, we get a very good indication of what they're likely to want. And then you ask questions. People are so intent on having the right answers. It's not about the right answers. It's simply about asking people questions about how they're doing and what they would like from you and whether or not their doctor is paying attention the way they'd like or the nurses are paying attention the way they'd like. It's simply a matter of asking questions rather than having all the right answers.
Right. And do you think that people kind of have an impulse to want to do something when they're with a dying person?
Absolutely. You know, there's a sense, Mark, of wanting to fix it all. But you don't fix people. You fix automobiles, you fix machines, but you don't fix people. What you do is you try to make things better by doing 3 things. You show up, A lot of people don't. You pay attention. A lot of people don't. And you care deeply. And a lot of people don't. If you can learn to master those three things, show up, pay attention, and care, the person who's going through their transition, who's going through the dying experience, will know that you're the person that they want to have there. Not because of anything you do that's so tremendously magical in its impact, but rather that you really want to be there with them.
You know, also you say that even in a terminal diagnosis that hope and positivity have a place. Can you tell us more about that in terms of how do you do that? I mean, when somebody has a terminal diagnosis, what's there to be positive about?
Right.
Or
what is there
hopeful?
To be positive about? What is there to be
and
hopeful?
To be honest at the same time.
Absolutely. You know, when my father was dying and I took care of him, what he was hopeful for changed. Originally, he was hopeful that maybe he would survive, but when it was clear that that was not going to happen, he was hopeful for getting out of the hospital and going home. He wanted to be home. And then when he was home, what he was hopeful for is that his friends would come and visit. So I called and I made sure that they understood that his friends understood that he was home and that he wanted visitors, and they came to visit. What people are hopeful for and what they're positive about may get smaller and smaller, but it's still real. You still need to ask people what their hopes are. How would they like to spend their remaining time? Hope is not just for survival. Hope is for quality of life also.
What about people that go to visit, say, a family member, and they have a lot of unresolved feelings, maybe anger, maybe they feel this person abused them, mistreated them, they have resentment. What should they do? Should they go visit the person, or how do they give peace and find peace and comfort in that kind of situation?
It's a wonderful question, and it's one of the most difficult challenges in doing this work. What's important is to understand that anger is the only emotion strong enough to wall off fear. People are often angry because they're afraid, and anger is the only thing that makes them feel strong. If somebody's angry at you, you might apologize if you think you did something wrong. If somebody is angry at you, you let them vent that anger. You let them express the anger. Sometimes they may be correct in what they're angry about. It may not be pleasant, but if you really care and you're really trying to be of service to the other person, you let them express that anger. You say that you're sorry if, in fact, you feel like you did something wrong. And you indicate to them that despite what happened in the past, all the difficulties we might have had historically, that you still want to be there, that you still want to be of service. And if they want you to be there, they'll let you know.
I mean, do you like bring it up about you're visiting somebody and say, hey, I have mixed feelings about being here. You did me wrong. Or do you just, what do you do in that situation?
No, what you say is what is true for you. And what I would say is very close to what you just said, Mark, that in fact, you say that there are some things in our past that were very difficult, that I'm still remembering and still feel very hurtful. But I want you to know that although it's difficult for me to be here in some ways, I still want to be as helpful as I can be. And if you're interested in having me be here, I'll be here. I think that you have to rise above the history, that I've taken care of people in my life who I wasn't necessarily all that comfortable with. But you have to rise above the history if you can and say to the person during their roughest time, despite what happened, despite everything that got between us, that went on between us, I want to be here and help if you want me to be. And
well,
then you see what they say.
Mm-hmm. What about stories? I mean, people, I guess you're with somebody and stories. I guess people have a need to want to share memories, huh? When somebody, I know I do,
Absolutely.
Do you encourage that?
Absolutely. The telling of stories is something, it's one of the most important parts of the book. You know, I wrote Life's Last Gift in order to allow people to understand just how important storytelling is. When people tell you their stories, they're not just flapping their gums. It's their legacy. It's their history. They want to hand it to somebody who'll live on after they're gone. And they want the lessons from those stories to be carried out in the lives of other people. They want their life to have meaning and purpose, and they achieve that by telling stories. I've learned more from listening to people's stories at the end of life than from anything else I've ever done. And in fact, you can encourage people to tell you stories. You can ask questions like, "Now that time is short, what do you remember most about the life that you lived? What made you happiest? And what are the things that had the most meaning for you?" You give them a couple of questions that allow them to tell you their stories. And once people get started, they'll keep going.
Wow. I mean, just as you're telling that, I can just see the emotion come up feeling in myself about when you're with somebody to have these stories, these memories. It's sometimes that's all you have are these memories. And
that's right.
And in fact, that's what you're doing.
That's what you're doing. You're making memories.
Right. So what about your what makes this book unique?
Well, I think one of the things that makes it most unique is that I worked hard to create an informative, well-written book that actually delivers on its promise to help family members and friends and health professionals and others bring peace both to themselves and to dying loved ones. And as we discussed earlier, the book is based on 9 commitments that caregivers can make that will make the journey easier. We've talked about a few of them, like listening and speaking and acting from the heart, about telling stories, about empathy. But the bottom line is that the experience of being cared for is more important to the dying person than anything you say or do. Just the experience of being cared for, knowing that someone really cares about you. And I think I get that across in the book pretty well. At least that's what we're hearing from the thousands of people who have gotten in touch since the book's release.
So I want to remind our listeners out there, you're listening to the Inspire Possibility Show. Our guest today is Charles Garfield. He's the author of Life's Last Gift. He's the founder of the Shanti Project, and he's just been sharing some heartfelt wisdom about how to be when you're with somebody this terminal. And so your book, I imagine, is available at all the bookstores?
Yes, it's available in bookstores. It's available on Amazon. All people have to do is go to my website, charlesgarfield.com. It's one word, charlesgarfield.com. And all sorts of information on how to get the book is available there, and a lot of other good information as well.
So what about, you're in the Bay Area, do you give workshops and stuff like that?
Yeah, I speak a lot. I give workshops a lot. That's also on the website, by the way. That kind of information is available.
Uh-huh.
And, yes, especially since the book came out, a lot of invitations to come and speak have come. I'm grateful for all of that, and it allows me to get the word out.
And do you give any seminars or anything like that?
Sure. I teach in a variety of places. I teach at the Jung Institute in San Francisco, J-U-N-G, the Jung Institute. I teach at the Star King School for the Ministry. I teach at all sorts of nonprofit groups, and I'll be doing an awful lot of speaking in the coming months.
So friends out there, if you want to hear Charles Garfield, just go to his website, find out where he's speaking, where you can hear him. You can contact him directly. You can email him. And is your email available?
It is. It's on the website. It's charlie@charlesgarfield.com.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the
right.
website is the website's very user friendly, and it makes it very easy for people to get in touch.
Mm-hmm. So let's just go over those nine commitments. I know we covered some of them, but we didn't cover all of them. And mm-hmm. The stories. What about I will use my pain to connect with you?
That one's a little complicated, but it can be explained pretty easily. All of us have suffered. All of us have gone through difficult times. And it's important to let the person know that they're not isolated, that they're not, you know, you sort of feel if you're going through a difficult time, especially a very difficult time, that you're the target, that you're being picked on by God or by fate to go through this, and nobody else is going through it. You know better rationally, but it feels emotionally like that. I'll use my pain to connect with you is letting people know that you've been in tough situations as well, and that you've seen other people in tough situations, and that they'll get through it, that everybody gets through this. Everybody makes it to the other side, whatever that means to you. And I'll use my tough times as a way of explaining that we share this suffering, that it's not just you, it's not just your pain. It's the pain that all of us feel during difficult times. There's a lot in that chapter that really explains that really well. And then small acts of kindness. I don't think we talked about that. But people think
right.
they have to do something major. They think they have to do some monumental thing like coming up with a cure or something that just isn't realistic. Small acts of kindness, like when I spoke earlier about bringing my mother her favorite ice cream, or when you talked about playing the flute, those are wonderful examples of small acts of kindness which can mean an enormous amount to the person going through the experience at the end of life. And, you know, a couple more, you know, I will allow love to sustain and heal us both. If there's one word that's really central, it's love. As usual, it's the key, it's the center of all of this. And if the person knows that you're there, that you're motivated by love and kindness, that's the reason that you're there, they will feel enormously supported. And you let them know by saying it, by letting them know that you're there because you care. You're there because if you're comfortable using the word love with somebody, then use it. If the word kindness is the word you want to use, then that's the word. But certainly we can all say that we really care, and that's what brings us to the bedside.
So, I'm looking at the last commitment here. I will accompany you as far as we can go together. So, tell me about that one. I mean, is that to yourself or to other person?
What you say to the other person is that you will be with them on this journey for as far, as long as you can go together. It's like being on a bridge and you're walking across the bridge with somebody and you're holding their hand. And at some point, they have to let go of the hand and they go on to complete the journey and you can't go with them. But what people are afraid of at the end of life often is that they'll be abandoned, that people will leave, that they'll stop coming, they'll stop visiting. And what they most want to hear from you, if you're a loved one, is that you're going to be there, that you'll be there for as far as we can go together, and then at some point it's over and the dying person goes on to whatever, you know, depending on your belief system and your what you believe. But we will be there until that point. Until that point, I've been there right at the end and watched people take their last breaths. I saw my mother take her last breath. I was with my father up until practically the point he took his last breath. And I made it very clear to them that I was going to be with them on this journey for as far as we could go together.
Or as far as they let you go with them.
Yeah, that too. I mean, if somebody wants to be alone, I don't run into that very often, but occasionally you'll hear people say that they want to be alone, that they don't want visitors anymore, that that the work that they're doing now is internal work. It's their thoughts and their memories and their dreams and reflections. That's what they most want to be with, and they no longer want to be with anybody. And that has to be honored also.
You know, I like to ask all my guests at the end, near the end of the show, what gives you hope right now?
What gives me the most hope is that I've seen at Shanti Project for 43 years over 20,000 people volunteer to spend time with folks with AIDS or cancer, to volunteer to do that difficult work. They don't get paid for it, not in the normal ways that we think of getting paid, but they will tell us that it's the most rewarding work they ever did. So when you think of human beings as selfish characters who only care about themselves, I would say, boy, you sure haven't seen what I've seen. I've seen thousands and thousands of people, literally over a 43-year period, do some very difficult work to support other human beings, and some of whom they barely knew. And I've seen the best in human nature, and that gives me hope.
Mm-hmm. Well, Charles, thank you so much for being my guest on this show and giving me and the people that are listening in an opportunity to hear about you and your work over the last 43 years with dying people and the Shanti Project. And it's great to know that there are many people like you out there that really care and know how to comfort people in these trying times. So thanks so much for being my guest on the Inspire Possibility Show. And I want to remind our listeners, every week we invite some amazing people to share their wisdom with us. I hope you tune in next week. And until the meantime, thank you, Charles, and to you out there. In the meantime, until next week, journey on.
You've been listening to Inspire Possibility Show with Mark Susnow. To learn more about Mark Susnow, go to inspirepossibility.com and click on the contact button. Schedule a complimentary visit with Mark or email him at mark@inspirepossibility.com. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine.